painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Now, here's Terry Tenseth with today's Artbeat.
On this episode of Artbeat, we begin our three-part series of The Butcher, The Baker, and The Candlestick Maker. Today, it's all about meat. Lederer Meat Processing has been in business for over 40 years and is a household name in the Winona area. Today we visit with Dave Lederer, who, along with his father, established the two locations. We will learn why cuts of meat cost and taste different, what goes into aging beef, how an animal is processed, and the history of Lederer's. I'm Terry Tenseth, and you're listening to Artbeat. I am with Dave Lederer at Lederer Meats in Goodview on 6th Street, and we're going to talk about meat and meat processing. Dave, how long have you been doing this? I mean, it's a staple, Lederer's, pretty much in Winona.
We've been here for over 40 years. We started in 1975, so it's been a full 40 years.
You take the entire animal. You process the entire animal, whether it's a cow, a deer. What other animals do you see in here for processing?
Beef is our the main stuff that comes in, live animals, and we also do hogs, some buffalo, some domestic elk, and some lambs, a few goats, not too many.
What goes into processing, if you could give us a description?
Well, they come in live, and we are USDA inspected, so we everything that we do is humanely handled and processed, slaughtered. What we do is we do slaughter all the animals here. They're euthanized humanely. From there, they're dressed out and into the hanging carcasses, and they're washed, split and washed and identified. And they goes into the cooler, gets cooled down. Every carcass is identified, so we know whose is whose. And the ones that we do, they belong to the local farmers. Most of them have their own owners. We have a lot of farmers, direct marketing people that bring stuff in for us to process. And being that we are USDA inspected, then it gets a federal stamp that gives the people the right that it can be sold and resold any place in the country. And we cut it up to the specs that they need, how they're going to sell it. Everybody's a little bit different. And we make a lot of different sausage products and patties. And pretty much there's a wide gamut of things that we do.
What goes into being USDA inspected?
Well, it's a federal inspector that is here. He's paid by the federal government, so we don't have to pay him directly. It comes out of the taxes. But he has to be here every day that we slaughter. He ends up being here 5 days a week, basically to look at the live animals before they're slaughtered to make sure they're healthy. And during the slaughter process, looks at all the glands, the lungs and the heart and everything about the animals to make sure that they're healthy. And he also has jurisdiction over all the plant to make sure everything is clean, the labeling is proper, and the paperwork is proper, so everything is up to snuff.
Can I ask you a little bit about beef and different cuts?
Sure.
What can be confusing, or what a lot of listeners might not know, is why different cuts cost what they do. So if we could use an example of a cow and the different types of sirloin or beef that steak that is processed, or in ground beef, if you could explain the different flavor and the different cost values and why that is, that'd be really interesting.
Well, basically, it's a supply and demand, such as, say, the tenderloin on a beef. There isn't much there. On a whole beef, you might get, each tenderloin might be about 3 pounds, and there's two of them. So between 6 and 8 pounds maybe on a whole beef, and it's the most tenderest part on a whole beef. So naturally, that's going to cost a lot. Otherwise, you know, they'd be gone and there wouldn't be any. The supply would be really low. On the other end of the spectrum, the hamburger and some of the maybe other cuts that are going to be kind of fatty and a lot of bones, short ribs, soup bones, they don't have as much value. The demand isn't there for those, so the price is going to be cheaper. So someplace in the end, you have to put a value on all of these items so that you get the total dollar out of the animal that is needed to come up with what the value of the whole animal is. So everything in there has a pecking order. You go with your T-bone steaks. They've got part of the tenderloin on it and the New York strip. So then you get the ribeye steaks. The better cuts, the more tender cuts like those steaks, they're going to have a higher value. Get into the chuck roasts. They're good, but they just don't have as much value. There's more of that. So you can get by with a little bit cheaper. But in the end, it still needs a certain dollar amount to come out of that animal.
What is your favorite cut then?
Burger. I'm not, you know, steaks are good. Well, you know, people go after the steaks, but I guess maybe I've got an access to it here. And they're good. I enjoy them. And a nice beef roast is very good. When you get them nice and tender and they fall apart, hard to beat. But a burger, I could eat a burger every day.
Even after working here all day?
After every day, yeah, I could.
Can you tell me a little bit about making sausage and if you make your own casings here?
We do make a wide variety of sausages here. Casings, no, we don't make casings. There are beef casings, hog casings, and sheep casings, but they're not manufactured here. That takes a special process to save those. For those that don't know what those are, that's the small intestine, I believe, of the animal. But they have to be processed in a way so that they're edible for human consumption when they leave the plant. And we're not set up for that, so we don't save them. We wouldn't have the volume anyway to make it worthwhile. Different sausage items, some of them take a natural casing, like the beef casing is on the ring bologna, bratwurst and Polish sausage, that's on that takes a hog casing, and wieners, that's a sheep casing. But then we make a lot of snack sticks, different kinds, different flavors. Those are, it's an artificial type of casing. It's edible. That's a collagen casing. We get them from a company that's called Nippy Casings.
What goes into making a sausage?
Well, you take a good meat stock, which is either beef or pork. A lot of the bigger companies use a lot of chicken, some turkey. Chicken is usually a little bit cheaper. But we use just beef and pork. Some items straight beef, some items straight pork. Most of it has a combination. So it gets ground, mixed together. You add the different spices. That's going to make each item different. Some gets held overnight for the flavor to soak through or blend in. Get stuffed into the different casings. Some don't take a casing. Of course, some things like pork sausage doesn't take a casing either. It just goes in a bag. Summer sausage and most of the things we make do get smoked. And we've got different smokehouses here. We've got three different smokehouses. Two are electronic, and they've got microprocessors on them. That's a computer that we can control all the stages. So it's going to be consistent from batch to batch to batch. So it'll be the same today, tomorrow, next week, next month, same as last year. And that's what we strive for, is consistency.
What gives the smoke its flavor?
There's three different ways you can get the smoke into a product. And one would be liquid smoke. And we do use some liquid smoke in some of our products that doesn't smoke very long. Yeah, there's liquid smoke, and then there's two different kinds of smoke otherwise. One is we use hickory wood. You could use chunk hickory and let that smolder. We use that on a couple of our different products. We like the flavor and the looks of that. The other ones, we use hickory chips, sawdust. And we've got a smoke producer that it's got a plate. The sawdust falls onto a hot plate that's at the right temperature, so it'll smolder, but it doesn't burn. Makes the smoke, and then it gets sucked up into the smokehouse. It gives it the color and the flavor that we desire.
How long does that process take usually?
So some things maybe 3 to 4 hours, others overnight.
What are some of your biggest selling items?
Oh, the snack sticks are getting bigger and bigger. We're selling more of those. We've ventured into different flavors and got the teriyaki and the cheddar sticks are very big. Summer sausage, that's always been a staple. You know, we make a lot of summer sausage, and the farmer style ring bologna is very popular. We go through a lot of bacon. We make a lot of bacon too.
What have been some of the challenges in running a business like this over the years? I'm sure you've had a lot of learning lessons, and with the times things change in the industry. Could you talk a little bit about all those experiences you've had?
Well, it has been a big learning experience for me. I had no experience whatsoever, and I didn't go to school for it, so I learned from scratch. Personally, my dad knew a little bit about butchering, knew nothing about retail stores, so we just kind of learned as we went. He grew up on a farm and butchered on the farm, so he got some knowledge from there, and when he was old enough that out into the working world, he got a job at Swift & Company driving trucks, so he went to all the different grocery stores, meat markets around probably 100 to 150 mile radius, and he just started picking up some equipment along the way. And when he built our house, there was a basement, and he put in a walk-in cooler and freezer at the time. So, and his experience came from the home butchering, so he knew how to do that. And he got the idea of aging the beef. So we've been aging beef here ever since we started. And like I say, it's been over 40 years, and it's been a big part of our business. I guess I got my experience from him, and just as we run into different issues here, we just handled them and learned from there. And we got some people that working for us that had a lot of retail experience in retail stores. So we relied on them, they relied on us, so we just try to put out the best product that we can and trimmed properly so it looks nice. I guess partly that's my responsibility there. My view is I have the guys here cut and trim all the steaks in a roast as if it's going to go, all of it is going to go into a retail store at a retail setting, so it looks nice, it's appealing, it's trimmed properly, and it's been working. People like what we do.
You talked about aged beef. How is that done? I mean, I know you let it kind of hang there, but I mean, what all goes into aging beef and aging meat, and how do you know when it's done?
Aging is for tenderizing, mainly. Pork does not get aged. That's a different kind of a meat that gets killed, and it starts aging itself real soon. So normally killed one day, and it's cut the next day and in the freezer, so that'll stop that aging process, because that'll get it'll start getting rancid quicker than what beef does. Beef is a lot more stable of a meat, so that's where the aging will help, and we let it age about 2 weeks. The purpose of that aging, like I say, is for the tenderizing. And part of that tenderizing, we use electric stimulation at the time of slaughter. That also helps making it more tender. It starts breaking the tissues down, so it's more tender. And the aging, you can do that at different lengths of time. That would depend on the temperature of your cooler. At our temperatures, we try to keep it about 34, 35 degrees, just above freezing, and 2 weeks. It's about 12 to 14 days, works out real well for us. And that also depends on how much fat is on the carcass. We've had some people that have requested to age for 3 weeks. We've tried that, and some it works and some it don't work. The real lean animals, most of the grass-fed animals that are lean, they don't have hardly any fat on them, they don't age as well. They start getting slippery and tacky, so then we start having some trouble with that. So I won't go any more than 2 weeks with those. But 2 weeks is a good amount. But like I say, it just starts breaking the tissues down, so it's more tender. And then once it gets cut and processed, it stops that aging process. So then when you get it thawed out and prepare it, it's nice and tender and flavorful.
Have you noticed any other differences between the meat from organic or natural farming versus conventional?
Peace of mind is a lot of that. By looks, you can't tell a difference by looking. Just the fact that it's organic or all natural, there's no difference. But it's a peace of mind that you know what's in it or what's not in it. You know, basically that's it, what's not in it. So I guess mainly that's where that comes from or what it's about.
Have you ever noticed a taste difference?
I have not had a big experience with eating both of those. And I haven't had a lot of people tell me that, so I couldn't really tell you.
What is it that you love about your job?
As in any owner, I'm sure it would be because of you get your own freedom. You know, the only people I have to take orders from is the government. I have to be told what to do. I guess it's my decision on what happens here. So I guess that part is good. Don't have to take any orders from anybody. I make the decisions.
Did you ever imagine that the business would be as successful as it is for you and your dad?
Not 40 years ago. I guess I didn't think that far ahead, but I didn't. Actually, I didn't know if I'd even be here in 40 years later. Didn't know what to expect, but things have changed over the last 40, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. What's your vision for the future of Lederberg Meats?
Well, there is definitely a need in the community for what we do. Being that we are USDA inspected, there is a need for all the direct marketing people. There's a lot of people who like to sell their product because they have something special. They like to, you know, sell what they have, and it's a little different than everybody else's, and they need what we do. So I hope that this plant can stay here forever, although I'm not going to be here forever. So, you know, I would like to find somebody that can take over. Actually, I'm up to the age now where I'm starting to do a little looking to see if I can find somebody that can take over, keep the plant going as it is, or even expand. There's things that can be changed and expanded. The sausage end of our business is, that can grow. It could grow if we had the need or the desire to do that.
Pretty popular.
It is. Yeah, further processed products are always popular.
I know we talked about you loving a hamburger. Are there any other recipes or maybe you got some cooking tips from over the years that you've learned that you might want to share?
Well, I'd have to say my wife does the cooking in my family, so she's, you know, I'd have to ask her. So, but just the basics is good. I'm not into the fancy cooking. I don't watch the cooking shows, so I'm just not into that.
Is there anything else special about Lederberg Meats that you would want to share with the public or let them know?
Well, I think we have a good crew here. They're all self-conscious. They like to help people and make things right. We've got people on a retail counter here that help people and make sure that they get what they're looking for or maybe a little bit more. And people in the processing area, they take care in what they do. They do a very well job in putting out a good product. So that's about it.
And I know you partner with a lot of local restaurants, and I know that people really look forward to having that cut of Lederberg meat. So congratulations to you on building a successful business that's a household name in Winona.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Sometimes I think about the longevity of 40 years. Anybody that's younger than 40 years old does not know Winona without a Lederberg Meats. So it's kind of one way to look at it. Yeah. It's kind of a little different.
I think it's just as normal to hear Lederberg as it is to hear Watkins. And here comes your crew. Thank you, Dave.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks.
Thanks again to Dave Lederberg for visiting with us on ArtBeat. More information on Lederbergs can be found at lederbermeats.com. That's LederbergMeats.com and on Facebook. I'm Terry Tensett, and you've been listening to part one of our three-part series on ArtBeat, The Butcher, The Baker, and The Candlestick Maker. Tune in for the next episode when we visit with Tammy Foss of Sweet Perfections, LLC.
ArtBeat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.